Okay, I've chosen case number 30 from the Mumukan collection today as the koan which I'd like to unpack. So the koan's title is Mind Itself, Buddha Itself. The case. Daibai asked Basso, "What is Buddha?" Buddha answered, "Mind itself, Buddha itself." Mumon's commentary. If you grasp it on the spot, you wear Buddha clothes, eat Buddha's food, speak Buddha's words, do Buddha deeds, you are Buddha himself. Though this may be so, Daibai has, alas, misled not a few people into mistaking the mark on the balance for the weight itself. How can he realize that even the mere mention of the word Buddha should make a man rinse his mouth for 3 days? If one is such a man, when he hears someone say, "Mind is Buddha," he will cover his ears and run away. The verse. The blue sky, the broad daylight. It is most detestable to hunt around. If furthermore you ask, "What is Buddha?" it is like shouting your innocence while holding the lute. So this is quite a famous koan. It's very short, deceptively simple. But like all koans, they ask us to let go of any type of dualistic framing in order to get it. Which, of course, is not that easy, as we all know. Those of you that have heard a few teishos and heard a few, or have said for a long time, it is not that easy to let go of that. So here we have two masters, Master Basso or Matsu in Chinese. He was born in 709, according to some records, and died apparently in 788. He is also known as Ancestor Ma. He was a student of Nanyue, and Nanyue was a student of the sixth ancestor, Hui Neng, very famous. So Matsu is thought to have had over 120 or 130 students at a huge monastery. So a lot of the great names came from this lineage, including the Linji or the Rinzai lineage as well. And he is one of those masters that really, in many ways, are seen as like the starting off of that sort of golden age in Zen in the Tang Dynasty, which is in many ways attributed towards to Master Basso. So the other master in the koan here is a master called Daibai, also a very famous master. Daibai means great plum, great plum. And he was born in 752 and died in 839. So again, you're talking way back in the Tang Dynasty, China. As I keep on saying that here, even though these koans are mainly stories, anecdotes, predicaments, whatever, mondos, that date back to this era, don't let that, don't think that because it was that long ago that this happened, that somehow it is some dead or ancient teaching. A koan needs to be alive. It needs to be alive right now, right here. That is why, in a Dokusan room, when we go through the koans, when you go through the koans with a teacher, you need to present it right now, right there, right? So it's always contemporary. When this was written is completely irrelevant. It needs to be made contemporary through this live presentation. So here we have a very interesting koan, which basically I'll read it out again. It says, "Daibai asked Basso, 'What is Buddha?' Basso answered, 'Mind itself, Buddha itself. When I first did this koan with my teacher, the translation was different. This mind is Buddha. This mind is Buddha. Okay. So the translation was changed by Migaku Basso and said mind itself, Buddha itself. There's another translation which translates it as this mind itself is Buddha. So that may point to it as well. This mind itself is Buddha. So one of the reasons that we don't get koans, one of the reasons that we don't get it, is because we keep on adding meaning. We keep on adding meaning to everything. This is like, in many ways, it's almost like a disease. You might say, well, of course we have to add meaning. You know, what are you talking about? This is, of course, yes, we have to have meaning, but we're actually stuck in meaning. We are stuck in everything having to have meaning. And so when we look at koans, of course, we immediately look at it from the perspective of meaning. What does this mean? What's he saying? Mind itself, it's Buddha, or Buddha itself, mind itself. You know, what? So we straight away look at all these koans from this, you know, from this paradigm of meaning. What is meaning? You know, everything, we want to add meaning to it. And if we don't get the meaning, then it's useless to us. It's absolutely useless. I don't want that. You know. In fact, I would suggest that meaning is, you know, what in many ways drives, you know, our whole situations with anxiety that seems to be so prevalent at the moment. Because when you look at, if we don't have meaning, you know, if you look at it from the perspective of no meaning, you know, this is when you start getting this koan. If you can really truly see no meaning, what is left when you have no meaning? Well, one of the things that's left is, of course, doubt. So you got doubt. You know. And this is like a big, oh no, this is what I mean by anxiety. Anxiety is nothing other than doubt. You know. And how do we handle anxiety? Is by somehow getting some certainty back. You know. So this is what we do. We want certainty back, so we start controlling things. We want to control our lives. We want to control the weather. We want to control our environment. We want to control everything, you know. And if we don't have any control, we might get sick or whatever. Then we, of course, then, you know, the what kicks in is anxiety, because we need some sort of control. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with that. That is just the way we function. That is just what happens. This is the way we're wired, you know. But here, we're talking about a completely different dimension. And this dimension that is being talked about is actually looking doubt as the essence of it. No meaning. It's like, you know, quite often, you may have heard me saying it many, many times, that famous analogy with the chain. We have these thoughts coming into stories. Then we start meditating and we're entering a space of no thought. That is the space of no meaning. There's nothing there. There's nothing at all there. That is the space of no self. That is the space that Buddha discovered. There's many words for this. No self, you know, is one word for it. Or emptiness is another word for it. Or true self, maybe you could say that's another word for it, you know. So I'm now using the word no meaning. Okay. It's nothing other than the word discrimination. It's just another word, you know. We are discriminating all the time, you know, because of we want meaning. We want some meaning to be had there. So when we have a koan, we need to somehow enter that space, that awareness, where we let go of our logical framing. We let go of all the framing that we are conditioned to do. And then we might enter into a space where we are free of meaning. And of course, it doesn't end there, as you all know. This is just you know, one way on the journey, because we obviously come back to meaning again. But when we come back to meaning then, when we come back to, once we've realized that there is no meaning, not nihilism. This is not nihilism. If we're stuck there, it is nihilism, of course. And this is one thing we have to, you know, we call it Zen sickness. If you're stuck in this, there is nothing there at all. There's nothing at all. If we're stuck there, we call that nihilism. But we need to come back into meaning. But see meaning as just a function of it. This is just a function. That is the way, you know, it's like duality, you know, is the function of non-duality. Duality is the function of non-duality. But we get stuck in this duality. We don't even get a reference point. People don't get a reference point of no duality. So this koan here is a, you know, this koan is impossible to get unless you can really see this dimension of no meaning at all. You know, then it all of a sudden, this word in the koan here. What is Buddha? Mind itself, Buddha itself. Then it just stands out. You see it straight away. The reason we can't see it, mind itself, Buddha itself, is because we want to find something. We cannot let go and just let it be. We want to find something. So there's a story about this. And I'd like to read this out. So this refers back to Basso and his teacher, Nanyue. So Basso, apparently, when he came to the monastery and he was still a student, he was a very dedicated student. And but Nanyue already had many, many disciples. And it was very difficult for a teacher to find out which student sort of stood out from the others. But one thing that Basso did, he was really, really practicing hard. And so the story goes that the head monk mentioned this to Nanyue, Basso's student, saying, look, there's a chap there you want to keep an eye on. He's really practicing very hard. So one day, Master Nanyue asked Basso, What are you doing? And Basso said, I'm doing Zazen. I'm practicing Zazen. So this was in the meditation hall. I'm practicing Zazen, just like we are practicing Zazen. And Basso said, what are you going to accomplish? What are you going to accomplish by doing Zazen? This is a really interesting question. And I'd like you to just think about that for a minute. What are you accomplishing by sitting here doing Zazen? Just think about it for a minute. What are you accomplishing by sitting and doing Zazen? Basso replied, I'm only trying to be a Buddha. I'm only trying to be a Buddha. So, only trying to be a Buddha. So in other words, I'm only trying to be enlightened, awakened. To get what the Buddha got, to be a Buddha. So sometimes when we hear the word Buddha, it's quite easy for us to just imagine be a Buddha, like there is this Buddha out there, or this Buddha person, and I want to be just like that Buddha. Okay? Or awakened. You know, it's just another way. I'm just trying to be awakened. I'm trying to be awakened. That's what he said. So hearing that, Nanyue walked away without a word, picked up a piece of brick in the garden and started to polish it. And he started to keep on polishing it until Basso asked, wondering, what are you trying to accomplish by polishing that brick? And Nanyue replied, I'm trying to make a mirror by polishing this brick. Basso asked again, Can a piece of brick be made into a mirror by polishing? That's what his question. Can a piece of brick be made into a mirror by polishing? And Nanya reported, can one become a Buddha by doing zazen? Can one become a Buddha by doing zazen? And the key word here is, again, is become. Can one become? Can one become a Buddha? Can one become enlightened? Can one become? Become is like, that's the key word, become. Can one become anything? You heard me talk about this many, many times, but it needs to be reinforced over and over again. Like, can I become anything? Can a child become anything? At any given moment, we are absolutely complete. You know, we really need to get that. Becoming is something like that. Becoming is something that involves past, present, and future. There's no such thing. At any given moment, it is as it is. Nothing can become. Of course, we can imagine that something can become, and we do that, and that's part of the functioning process of our mind, to do that, to extrapolate from now into the future and say, okay, when I grow up, I want to be this, or I want to be a plumber. If I work towards that, I'm going to be a plumber, or I'm going to be enlightened, or whatever it is. Of course, we can do it, but actually, can you become that, you know? And this is a key thing that we've got to start realizing, that we can't become anything, because we are absolutely complete at that moment, at every given moment. There is nothing to add, nothing to take away, because that is the way it always is. We can imagine it otherwise, which comes back to this anxiety bit again. We can imagine it otherwise. We cannot be happy with what we have, what we see right now. And then this starts this whole mind thing happening again. I want to become this. I want to do this. If only this. If I get a promotion. And this whole rigmarole of thoughts comes into again. So I can start deliberating about all of that. But actually, if we really get that we cannot become anything, we are free of that. Then you can laugh about it and you can say, yes, here I go again. And by the way, that doesn't mean that you can't have goals, that you can't think, of course, when I grow up, I want to be this, or I'm going to change this. That doesn't mean that. But these thoughts no longer entrap us, and they no longer entrap us into saying that, into feeling or imagining that that's the end of the world the way it is right now, especially when we've got huge doubts. And coming back to doubts, you know, again, coming back to meaning, if we get to a point where we can see truly no meaning, you know, that is being able to access this no doubt part and be friends with no doubt. We can be friends with doubt, I should say. We can be friends with doubt. This requires, this is maybe counterintuitive, you know, but this is the way, because reality is like that, you know. There is just, you don't know what happens on the way home. This might be your last breath you take in this sendo. We don't know. Doubt is there all the time. We just somehow twist our thinking to thinking that somehow we've got control. But making friends with doubt, in many ways, is very liberating if we can sort of overcome that barrier. Liberating in the sense that it does not need to be any other way. If I'm sick, it does not have to be any other way. If I'm tired and I had a bad night's sleep, it does not have to be any other way. That is what it means by letting go. The way it is the way. You can't change it anyway. And it doesn't have to be any other way is when we can let go of the expectations and we can get let go of all the meanings, all the discrimination. It doesn't have to be any other way. It's a beautiful state of mind to be in. So can one become a Buddha by doing, can one become anything? So Nanyue then said, "Well, what shall I do then?" He said, "What shall I do? I've been sitting here. What shall I do then?" That was his next question. Nanyue said, "It is like putting a cart to an ox. When the cart does not move, which is better, to beat the cart or the ox?" So this is quite not an easy thing to see. Which is better, to beat the cart or the ox? So there's a cart and there's an ox. So one way you can look at that is like there's our essential self, the ox, and then there's the cart, which is the becoming, which is the realm that we normally inhabit, the dualistic realm. The ox like the non-dual realm. We need to be able, of course, if you beat the cart, which is what we're doing all the time, the ox doesn't move. In order for us to have this realization, concentrate, not necessarily just on sitting in order to become something. We've got to shift our mind in order to see it. That's what he's pointing at. We've got to shift. And this is, of course, in Zen, we practice mu. We have this mu has this dual function of being a object of concentration, but at the same time to punch through, to be able to see it. So that is what you mean, what is referred to as beating or hitting the ox in order for everything to start moving, being able to see it, not just sitting for the sake of sitting, just sitting. You've got to be able to realize, we've got to be able to see it, and that is what he's referring to. So he said, when the cart does not move, which is better, to beat the cart or the ox? Basso was unable to answer. Nanyue then kindly explained to him, "You practice Zazen and to try and become a Buddha by sitting. If you want to learn how to do Zazen, know that Zen is not in sitting or lying." Again, you've heard me talk about this many times, especially in sessions. Zazen is not about sitting or lying down. Zazen is, we've got to see it as our day-to-day activity. Unless we can have our practice in, we can somehow see our day-to-day activity as our practice, this just becomes another dualistic thing that we do. So it's that's like, as I always say, there are only so many movements that a body can do. And we call those movements going or running or standing. Then we add to that, going to work or going to the bus or going swimming. And depending on what story I attach to going, I like it or I don't like it. But there's only going, there's only walking. And I have all these different stories around, there's only walking or laying down or standing. There's only so many movements, but the story flavors the whole thing. And if I'm free of that story, every movement is a holiday, going to a holiday. There doesn't have to be any anxiety attached to it. It's the story that creates it, So Zazen is not about sitting or lying down. Get out of that mindset. It's day-to-day activity is Zazen. That's what he's saying. Know that Zen is not in sitting or lying. If you want to become a Buddha by sitting, know that Buddha has no fixed form. There's no Buddha. What's Buddha? It's just a word, Buddha. Buddha has no fixed form. And, again, Buddha has no fixed form. This comes back to the teachings of no self and impermanence. Nothing has fixed form. It's the same. Nothing is fixed form. Who am I? The five skandhas. Buddha explained it through the skandhas, the five skandhas. I like to explain it through the analogy of the mandarin. I'm nothing but fruit and veg and whatever I eat. That's who I am. An amalgamation of water and bits and pieces, and then the story that I attach to it. That's all that I am. And there is like, where is the self? Where is the mind? This is again another story. And depending on that story, I have either a good life or a bad life or a happy life. And if I don't like that story, then, depending on how I travel in life, I can really have a hard time. Give myself a hard time. If you want to become a Buddha by sitting, know that Buddha has no fixed form. Never discriminate in living in the Dharma of non-attachment. Never discriminate in living in the Dharma of non-attachment. The Dharma of non-attachment. Beautiful way of putting it. The Dharma of non-attachment. If you try to become a Buddha, become anything. If you try to become a Buddha, become anything. By sitting, you are killing the Buddha, he says. If you try and become a Buddha by sitting, you are killing it. Because the concept is getting rid of what we are seeking. You know, that which we are seeking is totally free. There's no such thing as sitting in that which we are. There's no such thing as Buddha. You know. If you attach to form of sitting, you can never attain Buddhahood. So this is this little story here that that's quite interesting that Basso had with Nan Yue. Now, of course, we should not think that sitting. Now we could stop sitting because of this. Yeah, that completely misses the point. You know, it is through sitting, through our practice, that we can see this. Through letting go, through our object of concentration, and keep on letting go and cleaning the bucket and letting it come and go, through that we are honing our skill of being aware and seeing that. You know. So don't think that this is now all of a sudden a sort of a free pass. You know, we still sit, of course, but see it for what it actually is. This is what is meant by this. So, what is Buddha? Mind itself. Buddha itself. Mind itself. Buddha itself. Let go of all meaning. What have you got? Mind itself. Buddha itself. Just that. Mind itself. Buddha itself. Mu. Just that. So, of course, we can now look at that, mind itself, Buddha itself. We can make philosophies about that, and people have. When you look at the sutras and when you look at the teachings, what is mind? What is mind? And it goes on and on and on. What mind is? What is Buddha? And it goes on and on and on. We can go on and on and on. We keep on writing dissertations after dissertation about what is this mind? What is Buddha? What is mind? It's an interesting question. What is mind? It's the same as mu. It's the same question as mu. What is mu? What is Buddha? Same thing. What is mu? What is Buddha? What is mu? Of course we have to have a word for mind. You know, we have to have a word for Buddha. But these are just descriptions of it. And that it that we're looking for, when we're looking, we're always trying to come back into form. We're always trying to come back into some definition because that's the way we're wired. Can we let go of that definition to see this it? You know. At the same time, whatever it points to is it. You know, this is one way of looking at it. So here we have mind itself, Buddha itself as a koan, rather than a philosophical statement, mind itself, Buddha itself. The Roshi, he quite often talks about Dogen's famous saying in the Shobo Genzo that mind is nothing other than mountain, rivers, the great earth. Mind is nothing other than mountain, rivers, the great earth, hungry, cushion, Josh. Mind is nothing other than that. So, what is mind? What is mountain? What is Rinshu? These are all words that we cling to, that have we formed some sort of meaning around, and that's where we're stuck. So the goal is, first of all, to become unstuck, and then use those meanings freely, without the stuckness of it. And then when that happens, then all of a sudden it's not, that can't hurt anymore. Because what are those things that hurt? It's like coming back to anxiety again, or words and sticks and all of those things. If you see through it, it's just conditioned phenomena. That's all it is. In many, many koans, we hear the word, what is Buddha? So that's a sort of a typical question. What is Buddha? What is awakening? What is enlightenment? And there are many answers in the koans. One answer is shit stick or toilet paper. What is Buddha? Toilet paper. What is Buddha? The oak tree in the garden. What is Buddha? What is Buddha? That is the invitation that is being, that is, this is the way Zen is taught. We've got to be able to see that. We've got to be able to present it. We've got to be able to thoroughly experience that. So the story continues that after this, Dai Bai had a great, after he had this encounter with Basso, he had a great enlightenment. And after this enlightenment, he then went into the woods and he practiced for many, many years. As a lot of the monks, keep in mind that a lot of the monks are professional monks. I mean, that's, they don't necessarily live in the ordinary world as we know it. You know, a lot of them are hermits. So they went into the, he went into the woods, built himself a hut, no doubt, and he kept on practicing. He kept on clarifying his realization. And there's another story about that. And apparently this monastic from Basso's monastery went wandering through the woods, and he was going to cut, so the story goes, whether it's true or not, I don't know. He was going to cut a staff to go on pilgrimage. And he saw this fella there, and he got lost, so he was lost. So he went and asked Dai Bai, which way is it to the village? And Dai Bai said, just follow the river, and you'll get, follow the way of the river, follow the way of the water, and you'll get to the village. Which is a really nice analogy also in Zen, you know, to follow the way. In other words, the way is always presented to us in a doubt, like this is when I talk about doubt, that's what it is. The way is, we don't know. There's always doubt. We think we know. We think we know what's happening next. We think we know, but really, the doubt is always followed. Stay connected with that. That is the way. Follow the way. As in, stay connected with whatever is presented. Whatever is presented to you. That is like, follow that. Sort of goes a little bit into Taoism here as well. So this is what he did, and anyway, he then went back to the village, and he mentioned that he met this old monk or old person that was meditating in the woods to Basso, and Basso said, "Oh, that must be Dai Bai. He got enlightened when I mentioned to him that mind itself and Buddha itself is Buddha. Mind itself, you know, Buddha itself. That's what Buddha is. Go and check him out. See what he's." See where he's at. So he went back to see this Dai Bai, this monk, this fellow monk. And he told him that he's coming from Basso, and Dai Bai said, "So what are you doing right now?" And he told him that he was practicing with him. He said, "Well, what does Basso teach nowadays?" And he said, "Oh, he's changed his teaching. His teaching today is no longer mind itself, Buddha itself. His teaching is no mind, no Buddha." You know, that is his teaching. No mind, no Buddha. And Dai Bai said, "Oh, as far as I'm concerned, it's mind itself, Buddha itself, and I will not deviate. As far as I'm concerned, that's it. Mind itself, Buddha itself. Not this no mind, no Buddha." Okay. Anyway, he went back to Basso, and he told him about this. He told him about this. And Basso says, "Ah, the plum has ripened." So it's a famous, the plum, Dai Bai means the plum. So the plum has, the word Dai Bai, his name, means plum, the plum has ripened. And here it's interesting because this is only two, there's another koan, same thing. this time Basso says, no mind, no Buddha. Here's this mind is Buddha. So again, if we attach to meaning, we get completely confused. But it is absolutely clear if you let go of meaning. It cannot be clearer than that. If you can really let go of meaning. So, and the only reason that he probably changed it to, you know, mind itself is Buddha, you know, to no mind, no Buddha, is because we, no mind, no Buddha, you know, is a little bit like, what is mind? Okay, no mind. So if there is mind itself, it's like there is a mind. You know, we start looking at it from, oh, what about if there is a mind? And so how can mind be this? It's a bit dualistically framed. So maybe he changed it to no mind, no Buddha. You know, as in it's clearer that way. But that actually misses the point. You know, it may be a clearer teaching, and that's, of course, what happens. You know, teachers want to make sure that students get it somehow, you know. But the essence does not change. There is no difference between mind itself, Buddha itself, and no mind, no Buddha. There is no difference. And that's what you got to see. It's actually as clear as anything, you know. So this is another little bit of a story. Okay, so then we're getting to the... to Mumon's commentary. If you grasp it on the spot, you wear Buddha clothes, eat Buddha's food, speak Buddha's words, do Buddha deeds. You are Buddha himself or herself. You are Buddha himself or herself. Okay. So if you grasp it on the spot. So again, you know, grasping it is... when we grasp it, we're looking at it again from a meaning perspective. But if you grasp it, you know, you see the meaninglessness and you see the functioning. It's just, they're just words. Words have their function, but they're just words. They're just words. This is, if you see it on the spot, then you eat Buddha's food. You know, you cannot eat but Buddha's food. Everything, as I keep on saying, everything is everything. Everything is everything. I don't know how else to say. Everything is everything. Speak Buddha's words. The words, you know, the words are nothing other than it, no matter what it is, no matter what I say, it's nothing other than Buddha's words. If you see it, you know. It can never be otherwise. You can have the most enlightened person or the most deluded persons, all Buddha's words. Difference being that one can see it and the other one can't. So again, what is Buddha? What is clothes? What is food? We need to penetrate that. As soon as I say Buddha, food, clothes, we have a definition and we're sticking to that. We need to let go of that in order to see that it's Buddha's words or Buddha's food, Buddha's clothes. So, and again, you know, we can see that if we're aware of no differentiation, then that's this oneness. Once we are aware of it, you know, and then how does that manifest? Through the duality of it all. That's we're coming back into the meaning. So we see this nothing at allness in everyday life, in everyday meaning. Then it goes on, though this may be so, Daibai has, alas, misled not a few people into mistaking the mark on the balance for the weight itself. So the mark on the balance, so imagine the weight, a scale, the mark on the balance, a scale, for the weight itself. So though this may be so, Daibai has, alas, misled not a few people into mistaking the mark on the balance for the weight itself. Comes back to the meaning. The mark on the balance is what we add to it, the meaning for the weight itself. Let's be very careful about that. We've got to see the weight itself. And even me saying, we have got to see it, it just doesn't work that way. There's no we have got to see it. There's no we see it. It just is. But of course, through our language, this is not easy to convey. Because we language in itself, you know, It's just, you know, it deludes us into thinking that it is a certain way. It almost guides us into this dualistic framing. How can he realize that even the mere mention of the word Buddha should make a man rinse his mouth for 3 days? Like being stuck on the word Buddha or Jesus or God or whatever it is. My wife, my children, whatever it is, being stuck there. How can he realize that even the mere mention of the word Buddha should make a man rinse his mouth for 3 days? If one is such a man, when he hears someone say, "Mind is Buddha," he will cover his ears and run away. So meaning that if someone that sees it will not get caught by it, they will not get caught by these concepts. That is what that means. Don't get stuck in philosophical arguments, basically. Then it comes to the verse, the blue sky, the broad daylight. This is a typical Zen saying for the way that, you know, this nirvana, if you like, nirvana, the blue sky, the broad daylight. Like, it is as clear, there is not a speck of dust. First of all, to get a glimpse of that, you know, the blue sky, the broad daylight. It is most detestable to hunt around. Where is it? Where is Mu? I need to sit in order to. Where is it? It is most detestable to hunt around. Where's my head? I can't see my head. Where are my glasses? It is most detestable to hunt around, as in this hunting around prevents us from seeing it, from realizing it. We go on pilgrimages. People go on pilgrimages. Every step is it. Every step. But no, I need to go to Assisi, or I need to go to Bodh Gaya, or I need to go and see whatever, wherever I go on pilgrimage. I need to go to the Zendo, or I need to go and do Sesshin, or I need to go to. We go on pilgrimages. But every step is it. It's like, we cannot go anywhere. It's always there, you know. It is most detestable to hunt around. If furthermore you ask, "What is Buddha?" I was indignant. If furthermore you ask, "What is Buddha?" It is like shouting your innocence while holding the lute. What is Buddha? What is Buddha?